Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Barbara Yost on behalf of petitioner Freeport Mac Moran Corporation, a customer of El Paso. With the court's indulgence, I've reserved 2 minutes for rebuttal. And as I talk today, I'm going to be referring to some technical terms, which are all in my glossary to my initial brief, but if you want to stop and ask me more details, I'll be happy to do so. From day one of this case, FERC has maintained that it decided El Paso's withholding culpability in the capacity allocation proceeding. It's on that basis that FERC banned any consideration of that issue in this rate case. FERC is wrong. This is not a new issue for this court. The identical issue came before this court 6 years ago in the ACC2 appeal. The ACC2 panel repeatedly asked the FERC to identify where withholding culpability was in the cap orders. It could not. Nothing has changed in the intervening 6 years. Those cap orders never addressed the issue because these orders focused on providing a prospective capacity allocation remedy. FERC makes this point throughout the cap. I'll give you just one quote from the May 31, 2002 order, 99 FERC paragraph 61244 at page 62019. Quote, it is not necessary or material to the adoption of a just and reasonable capacity allocation methodology on El Paso for the commission to determine whether El Paso has oversold its system. In its suspension order rehearing in this case, FERC moved beyond that claim of estoppel and said that even if El Paso's withholding culpability during the Western energy crisis, even if they had done that, that fact wouldn't have changed FERC's finding regarding the prudency of the construction of the power-up project. On that basis, FERC found that the withholding issue was irrelevant to the entire case. FERC relied on that finding in its settlement orders at JA 10306 and JA 197-200 to ignore the issue of withholding when it considered the settlement. But the irrelevancy finding was wrong. It was wrong, as we just discussed, because the cap orders never decided it, yet FERC said it was irrelevant because we already addressed it in the cap case. It was also wrong because FERC never explained why withholding culpability wasn't relevant to other issues other than the prudency of power project. And on July 7th, 2006, when it issued its order, its suspension order rehearing, FERC already knew that Freeport wanted to argue as a holder of Line 2000 capacity that that capacity should be priced at the lower Article 11.2A rates because it was needed to replace 95 capacity that was withheld by El Paso during the Western energy crisis. FERC couldn't explain why evidence on El Paso's withholding culpability was irrelevant to this issue and therefore ignored it. And yet, Your Honors, FERC's Article 11.2 decisions throughout this case were all about who caused El Paso's capacity shortfalls during the Western energy crisis. But FERC, by banning any evidence on El Paso's withholding, chose to hear only one side of the story. FERC's finding that Line 2000 capacity should be priced at El Paso's recourse rates, not the lower 11.2A rates, was wrong for other reasons unrelated to this error regarding this allowance of withholding evidence. FERC found that Line 2000 represented incremental capacity added by El Paso primarily to meet East of California customer growth needs. But this finding was contrary to FERC's May 2001 order certificating the Line 2000 project, where the agency stated, quote, Line 2000 capacity was not intended to serve new market requirements for capacity above customers' existing contract requirements. FERC ignored its own prior finding here. It also repeatedly attempted.
Where do we find that finding?
That finding is in the May 2001 order certificating the Line 2000.
Do you have a JA site?
Let's see. No, but I do have the site in the glossary. I have the site to the order.
And well, maybe you can give us the site later. Since
I can. It is quoted in my brief. It is in my brief, and I'll look up the brief.
Since it's a key part of your argument.
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
I'd like to have a site.
Yes. FERC not only, as I said, ignored its prior finding, it attempted to hide the fact that its other reasons for denying 11.2A rate treatment to the line 2,000 capacity didn't apply to this project, but applied only to the power-up project, which was an entirely separate project built 2 years after line 2,000. And I call your attention to the solicitor's brief at pages 56, 57, which deliberately alters a quote from the initial settlement order in this case to substitute the term expansion project, where the original quote said power-up. Line 2000 was a capacity replacement project, and since it was replacing 1995 El Paso capacity, it should be priced like all other 1995 capacity. FERC also, in its Article 11.2 orders, established an Article 11.2B threshold presumption that the level of El Paso's 95 capacity was 4,000 million MMCF per day. It also set this issue, whether it was really 4,000 or some other number, for hearing. And this was one of the Article 11.2 hearing issues that the settlement in this case defers to a future case.
Do you know where in your brief you have this site I'm looking for?
The site, earlier site online?
The May order, you say FERC made. Maybe counsel can provide it later when you come back.
When I come back, right. I'll have that
Thank
for you.
You.
Yes, Your Honor. Turning back, then, if I may, to the 4,000, the 11.2B threshold. FERC conceded that 4,000 was not the right number. Freeport's evidence accompanying the settlement's comments showed that the threshold presumption should be set at least at 4,234. Now, before I go on, I want to say that if you set the threshold level too low, Freeport's rates are too high. So it's important to make sure the threshold level is at the appropriate level. And it was too low here, was what we maintain. And Freeport doesn't consider the difference, the 234, which is the difference from the 4,234 and the 4,000. Solicitor claims that was a de minimis difference, but that amount is more than the entire capacity of the Line 2000 project. We believe FERC's 4,000 presumption is also consistent with its own findings in the capacity allocation case.
When they say it's de minimis, you mean with respect to how much it costs you?
It's an absolute number. The number is de minimis.
Yeah. But how significant is this to your client?
The 24?
Yes.
The 24 is not that significant, but the 4,234 would be. The 4,234 is significant.
So the 24 is de minimis.
24 would be a de minimis difference. Yes, Your Honor. But we maintain that that's not the issue here. The issue is not whether it's 4,023, whether it's 24. It should be much higher. In fact, if you even just open up the cap orders, which the commission cites to for the withholding issue, the commission has blinders on when it gets to this issue, because I can give you a number of sites in the cap orders where FERC says the amount of capacity was actually 4,300. And in our brief, we show another filing made by El Paso 2 weeks before it filed the offer of settlement in 95, where it showed the capacity was 4,500. We're not saying today, Your Honors, what's the right number. We're saying that this issue should be permitted to proceed to fact-finding before the agency. FERC set it for hearing. The settlement deferred it to a future case. We want to have a hearing in this case on that issue. Now, I'd like to turn to two problems with the settlement orders, if I may. Actually, no, I think I see my time is up, so I should actually stop right here unless you have further questions and save the rest for rebuttal. And, Your Honor, Judge Rogers will have that citation for you when I return.
Can I ask?
Yes.
On this last point that you've been discussing,
yes, sir.
Which issue was raised with respect to how much it should have been above the 4,000?
We asked that the issue of what the commission set the issue of the presumption, set the a presumption that the number was 4,000 in its March 20 order, and it set the issue of for hearing to decide whether that's right or whether it should be some other issue. We never proceeded beyond that point.
But you did at various points propose another amount.
Yes, we did.
And which amounts did you actually propose?
We proposed in our settlement comments 4,234. And
4,234. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, counsel for El Paso.
May it please the court, Ken Meinsinger for Petitioner El Paso Natural Gas. I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal. This case, our petition, presents essentially two contract issues, and thus is really more about contract law than FERC regulation. The first issue is whether FERC erred by holding that one of the risk-sharing provisions of the 1996 settlement, Article 11.2, which would potentially cap the rates of certain 1995 contracts in perpetuity, is still enforceable, even though in the capacity allocation case FERC eliminated risk-sharing and certain other settlement provisions that were part of the quid pro quo for 11.2. The second issue is even if 11.2 were still enforceable. FERC erred because by its terms, 11.2 is no longer applicable. It only applies to 1995 contracts, not to new contracts. And FERC said in the capacity allocation case that it had, quote, abrogated the old 1995 FR contracts and replaced them with, quote, new CD contracts. It's unreasonable on its face for FERC to now say that 11.2 still applies because these contracts were purportedly amended, not abrogated, in the capacity allocation case. Standard of review is arbitrary and capricious here, and we believe no deference is appropriate because FERC's interpretation of the settlement and El Paso's obligations has vacillated. In fact, FERC's interpretation of El Paso's obligation regarding turnback capacity under the settlement is direct in the orders under review here, is directly at odds and conflicts with its orders in the capacity allocation case. FERC's principal argument made for the first time here on rehearing is that it really didn't change the deal, didn't deprive El Paso of the quid pro quo in the capacity allocation case. FERC says El Paso never had an unqualified right to remarket its turnback capacity, and in the CAP, the capacity allocation case, it acted to, quote, enforce El Paso's obligations to give that capacity to the FR shippers, the full requirements shippers. However, that is absolutely not what FERC said in the allocation case orders. We've attached the main order, the July 9, 2003 order, which this court affirmed, to our brief to illustrate that. In that order and the other orders, FERC made clear, for example, at paragraphs 5 and 112, that it was terminating and modifying El Paso's settlement rights and obligations, including its right to remarket capacity. Tellingly, FERC never said in the allocation case that it was acting to enforce El Paso's obligations. In fact, the word enforce, which is so prominent in the orders under review here, never appears in the capacity allocation case orders. Now, in the allocation case, FERC also emphasized and recognized El Paso had the right to remarket that turnback capacity under the settlement. Numerous paragraphs recognized that El Paso was...
The agency was simply pointing to the fact that you did have the right to remarket, but it was subject to a condition that you would have to make it available.
That's what they say in the orders under review, Your Honor.
Yes.
But that is not what they said in the capacity allocation case orders. Mm-hmm. If we could go to the July 9 order, for example, paragraphs 110 to 112, FERC addresses the allegation as to whether El Paso, quote, oversold its capacity. That was the same allegation here, that it had an obligation to give the turnback capacity to the FR shippers all along and shouldn't have sold it to others. FERC was quite clear it did not accept that allegation. It refused to find that. It refused to blame El Paso for the cuts in capacity nominations that existed on the system at that time. In fact, FERC is trying to have it both ways here. If El Paso had an obligation to give that capacity to the FR shippers all along, then why in the world would it terminate the FR contracts? ACC1 just can't be reconciled with FERC's rationale here. We need to recognize as well that in the capacity allocation case orders, FERC emphasized, for example, at paragraphs 98 and 126, that El Paso was merely following its settlement and implementing the settlement by remarketing that capacity to other shippers. That's what FERC had told El Paso to go out and do in a 1995 order addressing this problem of the turnback capacity. Even the customers recognize this. Joint Appendix page 1178, the customers recognize that El Paso could remarket that capacity and retain, quote, 100% of the revenues from the turnback capacity. It's revisionist history to say now that El Paso had an obligation to give that capacity to them. And it's equally important to recognize what FERC never said in the cap. It never said El Paso had an obligation under its contracts or settlement to give that capacity to the FR shippers. Paragraph 75 of the July 9
order. Is there a difference between an obligation to give and an obligation if the need arises to give?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because of the different provisions of the settlements that were at issue and that FERC did discuss in the July 9, 2003 order. Paragraph 75, for example, recognized the two mechanisms for dealing with load growth by the FR shippers. One was pro rata allocations, so cut all shippers' nominations to the extent they exceed capacity. And number two was expansions, which this court discussed in ACC 1. Those were the means of addressing FR growth. Now, FERC, of course, found that the whole situation wasn't working and decided it needed to do something different and terminated FR contracts and put the system on a path towards reliability. We don't challenge that. What we challenge is FERC's recasting those orders and recasting El Paso's obligations in the orders. Paragraph 59 is instructive as well, recognizes that the settlements provided for pro rata allocations and expansions. I would submit that FERC's interpretation also reads the expansion provision of that settlement out of existence. Why have that provision if the FR shippers could just grow into and take all the existing turnback capacity on the system? It just doesn't make sense. FERC also, in the orders under review, says El Paso cited no evidence for its assertion that the FR shippers refused to pay for expansions in the allocation case. That's what the case was about. Footnote 103 of the July 9 order specifically recognizes that. FERC recognized it, and yet it denies it here. The bottom line is FERC clearly changed the deal in the allocation case and the quid pro quo, and thus 11-2 is no longer enforceable. Let me briefly move.
That yes. The settlement gave El Paso an unqualified right to remarket this turnback capacity?
Yes, I am, Your Honor, and the commission changed that.
Where is that in the record?
That's reflected in the July 9 order, I believe, by FERC rejecting allegations that El Paso acted improperly in marketing that capacity. After all, FERC found that no parties were at fault. If El Paso were at fault, it wouldn't have made that finding. Briefly, on our second point, principal point of appeal, even if you were to find that 11-2 is still enforceable, it is no longer applicable by its terms. Again, FERC's own words in the July 9, 2003 order here are important. FERC recognized over and over that it was requiring, quote, new CD contracts. And by its terms, 11-2 just doesn't apply to new contracts. It abrogated the FR contracts. It says in the orders under review here that it didn't. But in paragraph 206 of the July 9 order, it specifically says we've abrogated these contracts. The FR shippers actually came in that case and said, FERC, this isn't fair. You've abrogated our contracts. You need to abrogate these contracts over here as well, so-called basin-specific contracts. And FERC said no. The concerns that led us to abrogate those contracts don't require us to abrogate any other contracts. It's unreasonable for FERC to now say it never abrogated the contracts but merely amended them. An amendment would require the consent of both sides, and El Paso never consented to these changes. We clearly raised this in our rehearing request. FERC contends otherwise, but there's an entire section of FERC's rehearing order that addresses the issue in the September 5, 2008 order. That's in response to us having raised this on rehearing. In sum, FERC is imposing a new deal on El Paso here, cherry-picking, imposing one provision on El Paso, 11.2, but yet El Paso clearly did not agree to apply 11.2 to new contracts or to any contracts absent the other risk-sharing provisions of the 1996 settlement. For these reasons, the court should reverse.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, Lona Perry for the commission. I would like to address first, if I may, the point that was just being discussed, which is about the relative obligations under the capacity allocation proceeding for El Paso to remarket on the one hand and to provide capacity to the full requirement shippers on the other. And the commission found in these orders, relying on the capacity allocation proceeding orders, that on the one hand, El Paso did have the obligation to make capacity available to the full requirement shippers. And this is, and the August 24th, 10 order, it's your joint appendix at JA 243, paragraph 74, but they also were relying on a paragraph of the July 20, 2003 order that El Paso just was citing, which says the commission concludes that El Paso has an obligation to administer its pipeline system in a manner that provides reliable firm service to its customers as set forth in section 16.3. And El Paso remarketed expired capacity when it could not meet all of its firm obligations. And then the commission goes on to discuss how there were conflicting obligations under the tariff, and therefore they weren't going to penalize El Paso, if you will, but provide a remedy going forward. But then on the other hand, with regard to the ability to remarket, the commission discussed in the same August 24, 2010 order, your joint appendix at 241, 242, paragraph 68 and 69, the fact that although El Paso had the right under the contract to remarket, it did not have to. It did not have an obligation to remarket. And therefore, while on the one hand it had an obligation to provide capacity for the full requirement shippers, on the other hand, it did not have an obligation to remarket capacity. And therefore, the remedy on a going forward basis was, first, you provide capacity for the full requirement shippers. After that, you can remarket, and you can remarket any capacity that's not required for service to the full requirement shippers. The second point that El Paso was raising had to do with whether or not the contracts were amended. And the commission found repeatedly in the orders under review that it did not terminate.
Can I just be clear? I think I do understand the point, but you're using the word obligation here. And they didn't have an obligation to remarket, as I understand it, but their argument is they had a right to. You get the distinction.
Yes, Your Honor, but what I was saying is the commission's point was under the contract you are obliged to provide capacity for the full requirement
right.
shippers. And although you have a right under the contract to remarket, nothing requires that you do so. And so as between those two, there's an obligation on the one hand, you have a right on the other, but not at the expense of not fulfilling your obligation to the full requirement shippers. And that's what the commission said. In paragraph 74, the August 24th order was, you know, just because we found that there were conflicts and we didn't penalize you then doesn't mean that we found you were fulfilling your obligations to the full requirement shippers. But the commission just chose to provide a remedy going forward as opposed to some sort of penalty analysis.
Can I return for a moment to this question of whether the contract was amended or abrogated? Council said amendment would require the consent of both parties. Is that true when it's being approved by the commission?
Not at all, Your Honor. The commission addressed this point actually in at JA 259, which is paragraph 112 of the August 24th order. And the commission pointed out that nothing in 11.2 requires an agreement of the parties to amend. It simply says, as amended. And the point was, is that the commission has, which everyone concedes, an absolute right to amend a contract in the public, where it's required in the public interest. And all of the Article 11.2 says is a TSA that was in effect on December 31st, 1995, and it remains in effect in its present form or as amended. on January 1st, 2006. And the commission's point was there is nothing about that that suggests it has to be any agreement between the parties. It simply says, as amended, and the commission, under its power, under NGA Section 5, amended the contract, and therefore the contract still continues.
What's your response to counsel's argument that the commission itself used this language abrogated and, you know, only recently has decided that it was just an amendment?
The commission actually never said it abrogated the contract. It said on occasion that it had, as a matter of fact, where it discusses this question, there is a title that says partial abrogation or complete abrogation, and this is where the commission rejected abrogating the settlement. And so it described what it did to some of the provisions.
Which order? Are you talking about the earlier order, or are you talking about the current order?
In the current order...
No, but their argument, I think the question Judge Brown was asking was about their previous descriptions, not the description in the order directly under review.
Well, in the... I'm sorry, I lost track of my decision here. In the CAP orders, the commission repeatedly described what it was doing as modifying the contracts. And this title that I'm talking about right now is in the July 2003 CAP order, and it is beginning at paragraph 91. It's heading the section where the commission is talking about the arguments where people had raised the argument that the entire settlement should be abrogated, because it had ruined the benefit of the settlement for the parties who are arguing. And so in introducing that concept, the commission said partial abrogation versus complete abrogation of the 1996 settlement. But they repeatedly referred to in the orders that they were modifying the contracts in the CAP orders, not that they were abrogating them in any way. And in these orders, they affirmed again that they were not abrogating the contracts, that they had simply modified the terms in order to make the contract just and reasonable. And my colleague has kindly shown me in the brief where we list the sites to the CAP orders where they say they are modifying the full requirements contracts, and this is at page 35 of our brief. And it's in the middle of the page. I can read them to you if you like. But
so there's no statement that this was abrogated in a previous decision of the commission?
I'm aware of nowhere where the commission ever said it abrogated the settlement. I mean, it discussed partial abrogation in the context of rejecting complete abrogation. But I'm not aware of anywhere where they said they abrogated the contracts, the settlement, or the FR contracts. They converted them to CD service. And the commission held that it was a continuation of the existing service that the FR shippers were already receiving. Hence, it was an amendment to the contract and not a termination of the contract. On the issue of, unless there are any more questions about the El Paso section of the argument, on the issue of Freeport-McMoRan, I believe, first of all, the issue of the 4,000 million cubic feet per day threshold requirement and the proposition that Freeport-McMoRan had put forward that it should be 4,234 instead. The difference in that amount of threshold capacity, other than the 24, which we now everyone seems to agree is de minimis, is the 210 million cubic feet per day that was reserved on El Paso for dealing with transient conditions. And as the commission found in the CAP orders at length at paragraph 62 to 80, and again, on numerous occasions in these orders under review, El Paso was required in order to provide firm service to maintain a reserve in order to deal with transient conditions on the pipeline.
Regardless of whether it's in the tariff.
regardless of whether it's in the tariff, the point being that it's a continuing obligation in order to, and this is actually discussed in the July 2003 order at paragraph 80, the commission specifically discusses how it's a requirement of the regulation 284.783 that the commission, that transient capacity be maintained, because you cannot provide reliable firm service without an adequate means of dealing with capacity situations.
This was originally in the tariff, and FERC allowed it to be deleted, is that right, in 2006?
Right, Your Honor. It was originally in the tariff, and it was deleted because, and as a matter of fact, in the order, the order on technical conference where it was permitted to be deleted, this is the March 23rd, 2006 order. It's in your joint appendix at 518. Paragraph 51, the commission discusses the fact that it is continuing to rely on El Paso as the operator to provide sufficient operational capacity to provide reliable firm service. The fact that the tariff provision is or is not there has nothing to do with the fact that El Paso, as in the process of giving reliable firm service, is required to maintain sufficient capacity to manage transient conditions on the system. And that is specifically what the commission discussed in the July 2003 order at paragraph 80, and how it is that under the commission's regulations, this is required. And so whether or not you have a tariff provision doesn't matter, it's still a requirement. And El Paso confirmed at the joint appendix at 1046 to 47, that they're continuing to maintain transient capacity on the system because they have to provide reliable firm service. That there was no giving back of the 210 million cubic feet per day capacity. The other issue that was raised by Freeport-McMoRan had to do with the Line 2000. And whether or not the Line 2000 constituted replacement capacity or not. And in that regard, if you look at the certificate order for the Line 2000 pipeline, you'll see at pages 61, 569 through 70, there's an extensive discussion of how when the application was originally filed for Line 2000, it was planned as replacement capacity because they intended to take some compressors out of service that were old and more expensive to run. But that because of the demand conditions in California, they had decided instead to keep those processors in operation and have the Line 2000 capacity approved as expansion capacity, not as replacement capacity. And the commission approved it as such. And for example, there is, which I believe is the statement that Freeport-McMoRan was referring to, it's at pages 61, 574 to 75, there is a statement about that the new capacity will not be providing new service, but the preface to that statement is, by providing more capacity to the system, the project will help current customers as opposed to providing new service to new customers. But there was never any question, and you can actually see this if you look in the Freeport-McMoRan Supplemental Appendix Exhibit H, which is the amended application for Line 2000. You will see there also they make the same explanation. We originally wanted this for replacement capacity, but because of the demand situation, we're now asking it for it to be expansion capacity. And so it's very clear that Line 2000 was always certified as expansion capacity and was always intended to be additional capacity on the system, and it didn't replace anything that was already existing on the system. I believe that covers the arguments that I heard being made. Are there any further questions?
I'm just looking at my notes here a second. I'll introduce Brad. Anything further? don't think so. Always helpful.
Thank you.
All right, counsel for Freeport, Mac Moran.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, as you requested, Judge Rogers, the citation is that you is 95 FERC 61176 at paragraph 61575.
This is at your brief?
This is in my reply brief at page 17. And in addition, Your Honor, there are other quotes from the order. And I want to just, if I could just add a couple of additional points on line 2000 in light of the commission, the solicitor's argument. The first point I want to make is that El Paso converted, first point I want to make is you need to read the order yourself, obviously, and reach your own opinion, but the context is important. El Paso converted this from a replacement project to add capacity, admittedly, in March of 2001. That's within that five-month window when the worst of the capacity withholding was going on, and they did it, we would submit, because of the public outcry, in part, over the high prices of electricity in California, and I'm sure you all can recall what was going on in the industry at that time. We also want to point out that
because
they recognized that because of their withholding, well, they didn't recognize, but because of the shortages, unexplained at that time, shortages of capacity.
Oh, wow.
There was not enough capacity to meet everyone's demand. Prices were going up. I also want to point out that the solicitor makes a point in their brief about how FERC was responding to ongoing reliability problems. The only ongoing reliability problems, again, chronology is important at that time, were the problems at the California border and at the east end of the system. There were no problems regarding full requirements east of California growth as causing demands on the system at that time. Those came later. And the solicitor says, well, line 2000, the commission says line 2000 can have 11.2A rates because it was added because of service requirements of the full requirements customers, but that changes the chronology entirely there. So the context, the chronology is very important here. The last point on line 2000, yes.
About the citation to the appendix where it's described as changing into an expansion project.
That's the citation the solicitor made to the application. Yes,
it was 10 actually.
Yeah. Yes, it's in our supplemental appendix. It was changed, as I said, at the time. Originally, they had proposed to take old capacity out when they filed in the summer, I believe, of 2000. And then the shortages started developing. The FERC Office of Projects wrote a letter to El Paso in January and said, you know, all the shortages of capacity, maybe you should rethink this. We don't have enough capacity. Maybe you shouldn't be taking capacity out of your system at this moment. So March 15th of 2001, they amended the application to turn it into an additional capacity. However, and this leads into the discussion of transients. However, the El Paso itself admitted that line 2000 was needed because it was needed to replace capacity that they were now claiming was needed to be set aside to meet transient obligations. And I can cite you to the supplemental appendix I, page 11. This is El Paso's pleading to the commission where they say the line 2000 conversion project alone will add 230 MMCF per day of capacity to improve system reliability. This capacity could be viewed as an addition of capacity that compensates for the capacity El Paso does not have as a result of the substantial impact of transient conditions. And if I could make one other point on the transients, transients are considered by pipelines when they build projects because the commission will not let them sell more capacity than they can reliably provide. It's unprecedented here, the circumstance here, El Paso, their shortage develops, and after the fact, 5 years into the hearing and in the middle of the CPUC complaint case, in its rebuttal testimony, where it's been established that it was short capacity, it puts witnesses on and said the reason we're short is because that capacity was needed to monitor transient conditions. That was never heard when they, the beginning of the 95 settlement. It was totally an after-the-fact justification. And FERC, in the cap orders, makes no findings on transients, it's important to realize, other than to say that on a going-forward basis, El Paso could not sell transient capacity to shippers. They do not go backwards in the cap order. The solicitor, when she got up, the first thing she said was, the cap orders provide a remedy going forward. That's all the cap orders are about. FERC has yet to ever address El Paso's culpability for these shortfalls. We were told in ACC2 we'd get an opportunity in this case to address it. I note the solicitor did not address that at all in their argument there. And for those reasons, we're here to ask this court to vacate the settlement orders, reverse the finding on line 2000, and finally to remand the issue of the 11.2B threshold for fact-finding. And unless you have any further questions, that's all I have.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel for El Paso.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple quick points. One of your honors asked FERC counsel whether in the capacity allocation case orders, which is the appropriate focus here, whether FERC had ever said it had abrogated the contracts. And I'd just like to read from paragraph 206 of the July 9, 2003 order attached to our brief, the last two sentences. The commission explained in the May 31 order why abrogation of the FR contracts is required in the public interest. There are no similar concerns here that require abrogation of the basin-specific contracts, and El Paso should honor those contracts in the allocation process. This also isn't just an isolated reference. The orders repeatedly mention El Paso should enter into new CD contracts. It clearly abrogated the contracts in that case, and characterizing them as an amendment here is just inconsistent with what it found before. Counsel for FERC also mentioned section 16.3 of the prior settlement. On that, I was simply, to save time, refer you to pages 19 and 20 of our brief. That section really, it was addressed in ACC1, and it does not deal with turnback capacity. It is perfectly consistent with El Paso's right to go out and remarket all of the capacity. Final point I would make is actually in response to Ms. Yost, since we are an intervener in support of FERC, and I want to clarify that while FERC's order should be reversed as to El Paso, they absolutely should be affirmed as to Freeport. Ms. Yost, the point I'd like to make is she argued that what has changed between now and ACC2? I think Judge Rogers, you were on that panel, and Judge Edwards, and the court there was troubled that there was no explanation of how El Paso had not withheld capacity. The big difference between ACC2 and now is that, as we explained in detail in our brief, and as FERC explained as well, in the orders under review, FERC provided a meticulously detailed explanation of how it had previously rejected these withholding allegations. I could address Ms. Yost's withholding arguments for quite some time here and explain why they are completely erroneous. But the key difference here is that the orders under review explain in detail, in an explanation that was not there in ACC2, fully why El Paso did not withhold capacity. And in fact, this court in ACC1 specifically said words to the effect that nor do petitioners in that case convince us that El Paso withheld capacity. FERC reasonably determined that El Paso operated its pipeline at reasonable levels of capacity. This court should follow that same ruling here and bring an end once and for all to this litigation that has now gone on for 10 years. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement. Thank you.
helpfully given me.
I'm sorry? I didn't hear you. Yes, what's your question? Push who out? They'll leave when they get ready to leave. It's no big deal. Don't worry about locking up because there's court at 2 p.m. this afternoon. So whenever they leave is when they leave. That's fine. You're welcome.